I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. Well, I'm very excited today. I met this amazing person at Q, and I just had to talk to you. This is Heather Walpert Garin. Did I say it right?
Yeah, Garin, like Karen, but
Garin,
with a G.
Garin.
Oh, no, that was good.
I should have asked you before. Oh, Heather, it's so great you're here.
It's so good to see you again.
I know. I see. We can see each other, everybody, but we're just going to be doing the, you know, sharing the podcast with you. But I am so lucky. I had such a wonderful conversation with you. So
oh,
I had
we
to
geeked
bring you
out for a while on that day. I remember we found each other and then like just geek.
Well, I guess I'm a geek too. I just love it. So let me tell a little bit about you, and so the audience knows. You're a middle school ELA teacher, 21st century learning instructional coach. You're enthusiastic curriculum design geek. You had to put that word in, right?
I love that word. I think everyone is a geek for something.
I know. And you're a PBL coach. And you know I love PBL. I just love it. So we're going to be talking about that too. Now, you've written many books, but your latest is Just Ask Us, Kids Speak Out on Student Engagement.
Yeah, when I sing in my head, it reads, Just Ask Us. That's kind of how, in my head, that's the tone that the students are using, because I teach middle school, but I've taught, you know, third through 12th in various ways. And to me, it's just got that eye roll in it, you know, like, oh, for Pete's sake, just ask us.
You know? And now I worked in middle school, so you know that, right?
Yeah.
So I know I can, so you blog on your site and you call your site Tween Teacher.
Correct.
Is that why? Is it because of it?
I have that real place in my heart for those middle schoolers. And it's not just middle school, of course, because it's about 10 to 15. So you have that upper elementary to the lower high school. And it's that time when we are just a huge work in progress. And, you know, I think I say in my first book that, in elementary school, you know, they're caterpillars. In high school, they're butterflies. And in middle school, they're howler monkeys. They're just a totally different species. And we ask them to do these big things, but their lobes are still smooth. You know,
they're funny. That is the funniest thing. I just love them, though. That's mm-hmm. the best age
it's
for
fun.
Me. That I really enjoyed that age. So I'm not done yet.
I'm sorry.
Oh, this is like amazing. You're a staff blogger on Edutopia, a fellow of the National Writing Project, and a national faculty member of the Buck Institute. Oh, I love the Buck Institute.
I know, me too. I'm so honored to be a part of that group. They just are both Buck Institute and Writing Project are just my academic fuel. They are my family that just fuels me, you know?
I tell you, that is a pretty impressive intro.
That's sweet of you to say.
I love it. Oh, welcome.
You got to be in organizations that you learn from too, you know? It's really vital.
Yeah. That's why I wanted you on my show. This is like, a lot of this is new too. So it's growing. But, I want to learn a little bit more about you, and I always like to start with a little bit about you and your family.
Well, a little bit about me and my family. All right. Well, let's see here. I have a husband, Royce, who I met actually in second grade. I karate chopped him, is the urban legend. I karate chopped him in second grade at recess, you know, just to kind of show I like you. And you know, then we kind of went our separate ways, actually, probably after middle school. I was aware of him, but we weren't really friends. It turns out, when we look back, that, you know, I was cantering around like a centaur at recess while he was playing Dungeons and Dragons over at one of the tables, and we didn't even realize that was going on. We now have two amazing sons, super yummy guys that just keep us laughing and thinking all day long, and a mutt of a dog, and we kind of just live in a perpetual adventure all the time.
Oh, I just... Okay, so we also have a blog that we're building, you know, together that goes... A post that goes with this. She put up the greatest picture.
Oh, I did. I sent you that picture. Well, you know how, like, there's it's so rare sometimes, unless you go to some like portrait studio, to get the picture of the whole family because someone's inevitably behind the camera. So the most recent picture I had of all four of us was taken when from my iPhone from a hotel room, you know, because when I travel for, you know, one organization or for my own consulting that I do, you know, I have to end the night, obviously, with my men, with my boys. And, you know, I'm either reading a story to the kids, you know, or I'm just watching them, you know, laugh and kind of try to end their day. And I just captured a moment that just felt very much of the family. We're a loud family. I come from loud stock. Oh.
I think I have that too. So maybe that's why we were connected.
Yeah, right.
So the picture she has is of her husband and the two boys, and she's in the picture because you're at a conference.
Right. So it's one of those, we're FaceTiming from the conference, and and I snapped it of them. They were goofing, and I think it was right before my husband was like, okay, we're done. You know, but the kids are never done. We're always laughing.
Oh, I love it. What a fun place and happy family. That's what you need. And they're not middle schoolers yet?
Actually, Benjamin is a middle schooler. My oldest is a middle schooler. And it's, you know, it's amazing to have a tween actually living in my home. But worse for him is that he's got a tween teacher living in his. So there's, uh-huh. You know what I mean? There's definitely a weirdness. He does understand and hear me talk about a lot of what he and his peers must be going through the lens of my own students. You know, it's interesting. I think he kind of comes at the chapter that he's in with some level of understanding. And at the same time, he's not interested. is pretty typical, too. That's fine.
Well, you know, because you understand that age, but it's different when it's your own child.
It's different. And, you know, and they're all, every single one of them is different. So whether or not the majority of kids are going through X, Y, and Z, that doesn't mean my kid is, you know, so, and I also have to respect that for him, it's totally new. So I can't, as a practitioner mom, say, oh, I know all kids are doing that. You know, you don't want to downplay what's so vital to them as a parent, even if you expected it, or even if you know that it's right on schedule, you want to respect that it's new and vital and oh so feeling for them.
Well, it's personal to them, and you can't take that away.
Yeah,
because that's their experience. So what about your experience when you were young? What was it like when you were in school?
Well, I tell you, I was a real kind of disengaged student. I mean, I went to some great schools. I did my job, but I really found ways to do it in the minimum. I got easy B's. If I liked you, I tried harder, got some A's, but I also got C's and a couple D's in my time. So I understand those kids that kind of skirt through school, never really being triggered by something exciting. And so it was kind of a surprise to me when I realized I wanted to be a teacher. That I actually found kind of late in life. And went back to school for my credential, which, again, was another eye-opening experience because I sat there listening to how to collaborate by reading about it in a book, how to do hands-on learning by reading about it in a book. And I realized that, like, this lack of engagement was a theme, not just K-12, but like beyond, right? Like just how we treat our learners. And that really became a huge focus to me. I think it helps fuel my interest in project-based learning. I think it really helped propel this latest book as well. So that's kind of what really brought me to this concept or this passion of engagement. Now, Kelly Gallagher said something that I think is really important, and it's really become my mantra. Engagement first, then content, then rigor, in that order. You can't have it any other way. And I couldn't agree more. And for that reason, I'm really working to bring engagement standards to the same level of importance as content standards, if not more so. And that's become my passion.
Well, you know, that's my mantra now is the why. It's the and so I've actually changed everything from my book and everything from starting with the what to the why, which is the engagement piece. And that's why I use Universal Design for Learning, because it starts with the multiple means of engagement. If we don't engage, help those kids and empower them or empower ourselves, we're just not interested, right?
And it gets them there. You know, we can't teach them if they don't want to learn, you know,
yeah.
And you know, and there's so many ways for them to learn out there. And if we want to be a voice in that head, you know, we've got to make sure that we are applicable to what's going on.
I think I just found a quote from you.
Really?
Yeah, that was really cool.
Oh.
So, no, it's amazing, though, because many of the people I talk to who are now, you know, like the leaders and the change agents, kind of had the same start as you did. It's like there was something there that didn't work. I wasn't that kind of compliant. I'll do school, just, you know, that's how I was. Do school to get out of school.
Well, and I'm lucky I learned, I understood that it was, you know, I had to play the game, you know,
yeah.
So it's not like
yeah.
doors were closed in my face. I didn't close those doors for myself. But think
yeah.
about all those kids out there who don't have the skills to play the game to keep their head above water and are disengaged. You know,
oh,
we're losing
yeah.
them, and there's so much there. So,
oh, this is
being
so true.
Bored is offensive to me. It really. You know what I mean? Being boring is offensive to me. Like, come on. You're in front of kids.
Well, it is tough to change some people. Some people feel you can't change other people. They have to want to do it. But there are some teachers that when you tell them that it's important to change because of where, you know, what our students really need in their future, they take an offense of that because then they feel that everything they've done is wrong.
But I do think that some teachers... you know, kind of heard a message early on that misled them. And I think they just kind of have to rewind a bit to who they were. You know, like, I think that, so in the book, the book shares the results of this survey that I conducted with 6th through 12th graders, where I just asked them the simple question, what engages you as a learner? And no matter what model of school, no matter what state, no matter what, you know, environment, rural, urban, doesn't matter, every response that came in could be sorted into the same 10 categories of strategies. And one of those strategies, and I think teachers should take heart in this, is that they just want to know you. So whereas there are some teachers that feel they need to be that academic wall, that kind of standardized, you know, like, so there's not one different personality in each room somehow, because they've got to take on this role of academic authority. The fact is that the kids really want to hear your stories. They want to see what makes you laugh. They want to know about your families. They want to know your similarities. And the research shows that that can decrease the achievement gap just by knowing commonalities between the students and the authorities in the room.
That's one reason why I do these podcasts. I found that if I just start talking and we don't know you, people can't really connect to you. Well, that's the same with everything. And you even said to me about curriculum should tell a story. So before you get to the curriculum, you're right about the relationships. You got to build those first.
Yeah. Yeah, or better yet, and I think this is kind of why I love PBL, I think it gives us an outlet as teachers to embed some of the things that we love into the curriculum itself, so that we are excited in a different way than just we like the content area. Like, I love literature, but I got to tell you, there are some books that make me yawn, you know? So, like, how do I get jazzed about what I'm doing all the time? Because being jazzed trickles down. Loving to learn trickles to the kids. So, you know, so how do we make that happen in the classroom if we've been teaching something for 10 years? And for me, the answer is PBL. And for me, the answer is kind of bringing the kids along on this story of learning where they get to be the characters.
Wow. I love that, because everybody has a story, but we don't take time to really listen or learn about them. And
or learn from each other. Those stories those kids bring into the classroom can be used to help other kids, right?
The issue I see with a lot of teachers, especially when you think of secondary teachers, is that they have the content, they have the standards, they have a maybe even a pacing guide. They don't realize that I knew what it was like when I was teaching. I felt like, oh, I did ancient civilizations, and I didn't get to Rome because I I was having too much fun.
Right.
But the thing is what is the real concept you want them to know? They can get that content online. How do you get them to really want to investigate and research and learn more on their own?
Or cast the kids as the teachers themselves. I think role-playing has a huge, no pun intended, role to play in school, right? So
yes.
If we can trigger role-playing in these kids, whether they are, and again, this kind of feeds into PBL, whether they are the role of teacher or journalist or architect or artist or whatever it might be, then they can be learning through the research of what it takes to do that role, do that job, and then sharing that expertise with other students.
Yes, and they can do it. They learn. We all learn when we teach others, especially if you force yourself to put yourself in an uncomfortable position, like you have to do a presentation to the other kids or you have to do something and do some research and then share it with the others. That means you have to do that. You actually have to do that work. And you will actually do it when you have to teach it.
Well, and one of the things the kids say in that kind of we want you to be human chapter of the book is that they'd like to hear about how not just you failed and got back up again, but how are you currently doing it? So one of the things I would encourage teachers to do at some point very publicly in front of their students is to take on something they've never done before so that they can model the learning in a more genuine and authentic way. So for instance, a couple years ago, I noticed kids really being interested in making and 3D printing and all that stuff, you know, and I knew nothing about 3D printing and I got a grant and got a 3D printer in the room. And I was like, so what are we going to do with it? And I didn't know anything about it. But we could teach literacy and writing by going through the learning of this thing, this new beast in the room, together. And the kids became the experts, and they were reading discussion threads, and they were talking to the vendor, and they were looking through how-to manuals. And they'd come to me and say, why does it look like this? And I'm like, I don't know. Let's figure it out together, because I'm not the answer person. You know,
but that's real world.
That's real
what
world.
It's going to be like out there for them. And that's what it's like out of school.
Our job is to keep schools safe to fail in.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be. I think Todd Finley said it was that a school has to be a failure sandbox. And that means that you've got to be mucking about the sand with them.
I'm trying to write this all down.
Sorry. That mucking is so cool. About M-U.
No. I know how to spell that. But so you're saying school is a failure sandbox, like Todd said. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying? Oh, that is perfect.
Yeah.
Because we don't let kids fail. We don't
encourage
time.
It.
No. And not even giving them the time to try again and try again. Because
you know
that's
how-
what... Yeah.
In those gymnasiums, they have those, they're not ball pits, they're like foam pits. They've got like those foam cubes and stuff. Well, because they know they're going to fall on their tush. You know, like, so why do we think that when we get the kids, they're not going to fall on their tush? You know, like we're supposed to make it okay and then put our hand out and say, okay, let's try this again. Come on back up and hold them back up again. You know, and then ask them, so what are you going to do next so you don't fall?
I wish I had been in school like that. It would have made it so much easier for me or my children.
Yeah.
So that is really, really cool. So if you were going to, I'm thinking of your role playing. I actually wrote something about PBL and personalizing it.
Yeah.
And I came up with some ideas of having the kids use questions a lot, coming up with
inquiry,
loads of questions.
Inquiry. It's the bomb. Yep. It's fantastic. It allows them to guide the journey of the unit and personalize it.
Well, See, sometimes, and there's a new thing out, they call the new PBL is passion-based learning. So bringing in that passion, which means that it's a little different because PBL is usually you're working in groups where passion so could be your passion, but you could bring people in to work with you on them. So is that some of the things that you're looking at also?
I mean, I kind of feel like I'm always looking at, you know, PBL from the lens of like design-based learning, inquiry-based learning, passion-based learning, genius hour, 21st time, you know, all those various incarnations that bring in student-centered, research-driven learning that really work very hard to break down the wall between school life and real life. Which is always so offensive to me, that whole concept that somehow there's a school life and a real life. Like, these kids are in school for 15 to 18 years, and we still think of it like not real life to them? Like, it's up to us to make it authentic. We have to. And that means this PBL plays a role in the authenticity of school.
So when you work with teachers, how do you do this when they're... The first thing on their mind is, I don't have the time. I don't know how to fit it in.
Well, for one thing is I totally get it. I mean, I'm still in the classroom, so I totally understand the train that you're on. But having said that, I do believe that best practice and evidence says that if we want the kids to have the content stick, they have to be engaged. If we want the content to stick, we have to have it be more student-centered. And the way we've done it before isn't working. So if our goal is for them to learn more deeply or higher test scores or whatever, it seems to me that we have to be evolving in our practice. But I understand the train that we're on. So when I work with teachers, it's really about, talk to me about your individual issues and the gatekeepers keeping you from doing this, and let's work through those together. And I can be a part of that journey with you because we all need to be working together.
So how do you do that? You're working in the schools as, you know, as a teacher. Are you also a coach?
Yeah. So right now, this particular year, they have me, they've given me some release time to work with teachers around the district. But I still allow, I'm able to end my day with a couple periods of my middle schoolers, the language arts classes. So it's a wonderful one foot in, one foot out. But for me, I wish there were more organic pathways for teachers like these that would allow them to spread their expertise and still keep their passion in the classroom. I think that working with students fuels my work with adults, and conversely, working with adults continues to keep working with students very fresh for me.
Yeah, I've talked to, you know, some of the people that I've talked to just also said the same thing, that every teacher needs to get out there and present or work with another teacher. So more and more schools are looking at ways of maybe co-teaching models or giving them release time to go in and work on a project together or bring their classes together to do,
And one of my focuses as a coach is trying to cultivate the leadership in the teaching pool. I believe very strongly in the power of teaching and best practice. And I think that there is such talent out there. I think it's really vital that we just help nurture the talent that's out there. I think that it spreads what we want to see to more students, but it also helps our profession and the reputation of our profession as a whole. I think there's a long game here to be played, and that's to support each other.
Well, that's one of the things that I'm seeing is more and more schools are looking at more job-embedded, more models. So they're building coaching, but how to do that is not that easy because you need so many teachers. And then what do you do? Not everyone can do the same kind of schedule as you, even though it's so cool. I mean, they need you, but also I think it's really important for a coach to still stay in the classroom.
Oh, well, I would also make the argument I'd love to see more admins stay in the classroom. I wrote a piece for Edutopia last year, I think, that really kind of focused on how a particular school and that that philosophy of how do we kind of keep our administrators, you know, in the trenches as well, and what it can really do to strengthen our system. But it's got its challenges. You know, I get it. The system, you know, has its own gatekeepers that make it very difficult. But that's not to say we shouldn't be visualizing what we would like, because we'll get closer that way.
Well, that's one reason why I've been traveling, going to different places. And in New Zealand, they've changed the whole model. So they have it so administrators that are actually more effective, they have shared leadership so they can leave and work in another school for 2 days a week.
Oh, as an admin coach kind of thing?
As an admin coach.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because they said sometimes it's working for you so well, you're not even needed as much, you know, because now everyone pulls in. If it's like geese, you know, it's like the leader. If you leave, someone else takes over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're finding that if they can, now they've done that, they're finding they don't need to bring people from the outside in as much, because now we're bringing in and supporting the people that are there. It's amazing how you see how things can change in different areas, but it means a whole system change, because professional development is kind of, you know, still a one day thing, and you might bring someone in for 1 day. And I've been asked to come in for 1 day, and it's really very frustrating, because I'm not going to really make that much change. I would rather see ways where we can build this coaching model like you have, and or even look at seeing how administrators can do what you were saying. There's also places where they've redesigned so the administrator's office is everybody's office. And the administrator spends a lot of time. There's like Bethany Hill. She's one of the principals that I interviewed, who's amazing. She spends her day walking around and sitting in the classrooms. And Darren Elliman is another one in South Dakota. He walks around with Periscope taking pictures of what's going, you know, videos of what's going on. And I think we all need to celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it starts with one school site, right? Just deciding to make that shift and expanding from there and rippling from there based on what we're seeing as successes, and allowing things to fail too. I mean, we need to have our own failure sandbox ultimately. You know, what's working and what isn't working.
And share it. It's okay. See, I think the problem is we're so afraid that if we put out our failures, it's bad. But actually, people go, wow, and what did you do to make it better? Or what did you do? What did you learn from it? Well, help others. So let me just see, there were some other things that you mentioned. With your book, you asked them how they engage as a learner. What kinds of other things came out of your book that you learned?
Yeah, so let's see here. I mean, you know, first of all, I have to say that the kids know what they're talking about. No surprise there. because everything they mentioned is already backed by research. It just hadn't come from the kids themselves, right? And so, you know, we have everything from, you know, let us work together, let us talk, you know, that's of course. We know that the kids want things to be visual. They want to use technology. The fact that they want things meaningful, they don't want to be working on worksheets because it just doesn't have an impact on their lives. One of the things that I found very interesting is that time and time again, students were saying, please keep it new and fresh. And I, you know, and of course, every time I see a trend in the responses, I'd start doing my research. Like, what are they talking about? Isn't it new every grade level? No, like for at least in the United States, and I know that you are listened to in Canada as well, but at least in the United States, depending on the state that the student was responding from, you know, 20% to 50% of their material or their methods was repeated from year to year. So we're not talking about spiraling, like going deeper and deeper into a particular concept. We're talking about literally it's the same curriculum or it's the same method. So for instance, a district might do a training in Flipbooks, right, or Cornell Notes, totally valuable artifacts, right, and processes. But now you've got every grade level doing that. You've got a problem. So without vertical articulation, you don't have a way to really gauge whether, okay, enough's enough. The kids are now not engaged by this. So it was just really interesting to kind of to hear it all coalesce a bit.
So that's, it'd be really nice if we all listened to the kids and asked them right in the beginning.
There's a downloadable in the book. If people buy the book, they can grab the downloadable and they can ask their own students their own survey. And that's really how it all started. I started by asking my students in one period. This was like in 2012. I asked kids. That was about 36 kids. And then by 2013 or 14, I had started asking all my students. So that was about 210 students, because that's how many I taught in one day. And then in 2015 is when I went nationwide with the survey and said, why am I stopping with my own kids? But the really interesting thing is that the same categories came up, no matter if it was scaled down or scaled up.
Amazing. Well, this is, you know, there is a Gallup poll that talks about engagement and hope, you know, that says that they lose engagement with as they get older and the reasons why and whatever. But coming up with that data and putting it in a book, and I'm definitely going to put a link to your book, figure out how they can get it, because I think they need to. And also we'll put some of the other resources that you mentioned.
Oh, and I do want to mention that in the book, too, there are videos, links to videos of people in the classroom doing those strategies.
Oh, wow.
As well as a couple lesson plan examples, things like that. It's not just the research.
Oh, cool. And we'll put a link to your website and all that, because I saw you've done a lot there and you have your blog. You're just amazing. And also doing blogging on Edutopia and for Buckins. I mean, all the things you're doing is mind-blowing. But that is...
Well, it's important to continue working with people that fuel you.
Yeah. And that's why you're on my show. I have to...
I'm glad to be here, Barbara.
Yeah, you did so great. I love it. And we're going to...
It's so much fun.
Yeah. Well, and we'll definitely keep this conversation going.
I would love it.
And we'll be sharing the post out and with the podcast very soon, because I think people need to hear this and know about you. You know, I never asked where you live.
I live in Los Angeles, California.
Ah, I know you live in California, but other people wouldn't know that. Okay, so not too far.
We've got the fires going over right now over in our area, not our area of the city, but
yeah,
over on the other side of Los Angeles. So,
it's pretty smoky. We had I'm in Northern California. We had a red flag alert, and it was so smoky yesterday. That's why I sound like this. I was coughing all day. It was crazy. So thank you so much for being on my show. I'm just so
My happy pleasure. You're here. It's so much fun to get chatty with you, I gotta tell you.
Thank you, dear. We'll get you back another time, too.
Wonderful. Excellent.
Bye for now. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning Podcast and my conversation with Heather Walbrook-Gayron. Look for a complimentary blog post about Heather. And, you know, being a geek, we kind of are geeks together. So what we did is we pulled together resources, pictures, and links for you. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave us a review. You can also subscribe to my website at barbarabray.net to receive announcements, updates, and more, so you don't miss any of the conversations.